welcome to the latest episode of 50/50 Unplugged. Lindsay and I are both founders of 50/50 Future. 50/50 is a diversity and inclusion training and consultancy company. And in this episode, we've been catching up with James Carrs. James is the founder of the Castle Peak Group. They're an executive search consultancy that are really driven by their belief in the importance of diversity and inclusion in the workplace.
We're really looking forward to chatting with James about all things employer brand and how that interplays with attracting talent and, importantly, retaining that talent. All things around how that should align with our company's values and its mission and vision. And I think that reputation piece and how we attract different stakeholders and clients as well as our talent really shapes our company and how people view our brand and interact with it. So we've talked about so much within this podcast. Hopefully you'll find some food for thought or bits that will be interesting for you.
Yeah, here's hoping, and expect, as always, us to go off on a few tangents as we go. So let's dive into it. Good morning. Happy Friday. And thank
morning.
You so much for coming along and chatting again with Lindsay and I at 50/50. James, can you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do?
Certainly. Thanks, Lindsay. And thank you for inviting me this morning. Pleasure to be here on a Friday. So my name is James Carrs. I'm the founder and chief exec of an organization called Castle Peak Group, which is newly founded in January of this year, 2024. And we focus on diverse and inclusive executive search and board level search.
Fab. Thank you so much, James. So there's obvious synergy between yourself and us, Lindsay. For those people that maybe don't know, Lindsay and I are co-founders of 50/50 Future, which is a diversity and inclusion training and consultancy company, which takes a real holistic approach to diversity and inclusion, placing value in that intersectionality piece. So yes, we've obviously been chatting with you on and off for a while. We know you obviously in the guise that you are today with Castle Peak, but we've known you historically as well, previous worlds. But we're really interested about what you're doing, and we wanted to chat all things recruitment.
Yeah.
Particular attention to the real importance of employer branding in recruitment, with obviously that D&I lens for both of us, which we'll be interested in. Yeah, so that's the aim of what we're looking to achieve.
Sounds good.
Fab. So I think it's probably a good idea just to chat a little bit about employer brand and what that means and what that looks like in a company. So I suppose for us, it's really about that an organization's identity, so what they stand for, and how that aligns with their values, their vision and mission as well. And I think that a lot of times people will associate that employer brand with talent and, you know, attracting talent into the company, and rightly so as well. It's hugely important. But also, it's not just attracting talent, it's about attracting different stakeholders and clients as well, and standing out from the competition. And it's also really important when it comes to retention and engagement with colleagues as well. So there's a whole big piece around those first impressions and how people within the organization and people associated with your organization are going to feel about being part of that. So I think it's a much bigger piece than what we might initially think about. So I suppose in a nutshell, that's kind of what we're talking about here when we're talking about that employer brand. And I suppose today it's just exploring that a bit more about how companies can best use that and align it with diversity and inclusion to get the most from it. And maybe some examples of what we've seen when it hasn't gone as well, or the challenges that companies face with it. I don't know whether anything springs to mind for you straight away, James, when we're talking about that with organizations.
No, I agree with you. And I think it's... a lot of people see it as very simply just sort of the website and the actual branding or marketing branding or brand guidelines of that organization. But it, to me, it goes much deeper than that. That's very superficial. in a way, it is the shop front of your organization when people look at it. But that's not just the website. That's one part of it. But it's the consistency that runs through that. It's the DNA of the organization, but bringing it to life. And of course, it's represented through the people, but very much from a recruitment point of view, it's represented through the application process on whether a candidate wants to apply, a potential candidate wants to apply to that organization, whether it looks like they're inclusive, whether it looks like a really good organization to work for. And then up to the moment during that, when they do their research, when they first step into the office for a conversation, and how that whole experience is, the experience that goes with it, and the people that they meet, and whether they, you know, you start getting into values, and whether you can see that consistency that runs through, which, you know, we've talked about this before, which really come down from the top. But does it go all the way to the top of the organization through all levels, which is, you know, is the DNA the same? You want to see differences. You want diversity in an organization, but you want to see all that value alignment coming through into the proposition. And already now, me talking in this very convoluted way, it's complex. It's a simple thing in many ways, but it's also complex to get that right and to be able to do it, I think, with authenticity, honesty, and consistency.
Yeah, I think it really needs to be purposeful, doesn't it? I've seen some examples with clients that we've worked with, or just homework, being nosy and looking at organizations that have maybe come across. You know, a lot of the time you'll go onto their website and everything is customer focused.
Yeah.
There's nothing there at all about their colleagues or the team behind it. I mean, a team is the business, right? Without that, you don't have anything really to go off. And there's a few things you mentioned there, James, about authenticity. And again, that's one that I think is really overlooked now and again, probably with the best intentions as well. So a lot of the times you'll see things like stock diversity picks throughout websites with, I'm sure, the intention completely innocently and well-meaning to show that they want to attract loads of diversity and different perspectives into the organization. But actually, I don't think it quite aligns when you see that it's a bugbear of mine. You've got a man, you've got a woman, you've got a person of color, you've got a visibly disabled person. It's kind of that tick box to show, oh, we're doing this and this is important to us. And you think, oh.
Especially if it's very clear, it's stock imagery, which a lot of them are. I think it can give the complete reverse impression that they're wanting to do, and you know, people are savvy, and you said you snoop on organ. We all do. Well, I prefer to call it research and due diligence, but you could say snooping on companies. Yeah, and the first thing that I look at is the makeup of the executive team and the board, to see, you know, where that is, how much does that represent. Everything else, and it's got to include the customers as well. And I appreciate, depending on the industry the organization is, their website may be looked to be very customer focused. But when you go into those sections, which every organization has on the about us or come and work for us, when it's still on brand but is a bit faceless and doesn't give you that impression. Or if that kind of stock imagery is being used, but the reality on the makeup of the executive teams and boards looks very, very different to that. That's a bit of a red flag for me in terms of an organization. But I do appreciate that many are on a journey.
Yeah, exactly.
And it could be they're trying to change, and that's great, and that's really good. But then that's got to come out as well. And that statement has to be made as well. And I think it's got to be on the front foot. It's got to be very honest. And that's where we're getting into it now, but that's where things like video can be very useful along with imagery to actually put the narrative and the story behind the journey and where the organization is now. And if I was a potential applicant and an organization said, was making a statement, look, we're not there now. We know there's a lot of work that needs to be done. We want to be there. come and help us on that journey. That to me is a lot more powerful than putting up, you know, the usual typical photographs that we all see.
I think it's so difficult, isn't it, with organisations who want to do the right thing, because we hear so often that companies will say, well, we don't really have a diverse workforce, so, you know, we want to show that we want to attract diverse employees or candidates into the company. But I think for us, first of all, again, as you say, it's really counterproductive, because even if, you know, you do end up attracting diverse talent to what you have in the organisation, once they get in there, that there's an element of trust that's broken down then, because they're looking around going, well, that wasn't the story I was sold coming in. But then also, I think from our perspective, what we're seeing a lot of is, so when it, definitely when it comes to boards, I think we see a lot of this where people worry about the perceptions of the company, because they, on the face of it, they seem to have, you know, like say a visibly mainly male, mainly white board. So they get really uncomfortable about that, because they want to promote that they're diverse. But yeah, for us, I think it's really important that they're showcasing all of the diversity that's there, because there's so much invisible diversity. Absolutely. People get really hung up on those visible traits, and there's just not enough of bringing those stories forward and that communication, that narrative. And I think videos are a great way of doing that. So in terms of the communication strategy within the organisation, how do they get those stories, those voices, those experiences of the board, of the wider workforce, and, you know, the benefits that they're getting from the company, and all of those different traits that people might have, to convey that? Because it, I think it's really quite, it puts up a lot of barriers if we're just going to be looking at the visible traits. And I totally get why. And again, it's been on that journey, isn't it? You don't know what you don't know, and they're trying.
Yeah.
I totally get it. But yeah, we've just got to maybe think a little bit wider than that.
I think you're right. And it resonated with me when you said, you know, if an organization turns around and says, we don't have a diverse workforce, my first thought is, really? Let's talk about what diversity actually is. And as you said, a lot of it's invisible or hidden. And it's one, do you know that? Do you realize that? Do you celebrate those differences within that workforce, and how? Because it then takes us back to the shop front. If you want the obvious areas of diversity, why are you doing it? Because why we're looking for diversity is, it's two things, isn't it? It's fairness, so everybody's got access to the same opportunities that everybody else, which is absolutely the right thing to do. And then there's the benefit that comes to the organization and the customers and the employees of bringing all these great ideas that come together from different lenses. And they're not just from obvious sides. There's all, it's all the neurodiversity and sexuality and all sorts of different things that can create a different lens to bring together more ideas, more innovation. And I think, so there's an education piece that goes with that as well. And of course we want to celebrate everything around it. And but it's how they put that across into the employer branding. I would imagine it's very easy to get it wrong.
Yeah. And I think more so whenever there's not a considered approach taken to it. And that can be hard, you know, because often, yeah, it's thrown on someone's desk as an add-on to their specialism and what they've trained in or done for years. And then you have these D&I consultants, or you have somebody internally saying, you know, we should really be doing this, we need to incorporate it. Where do you start? It can, yeah, be really overwhelming more than anything. I think you made a good point before, James, when you mentioned about, you know, all of these concealable traits that people have, and really picking apart what diversity means. And it's not just as visible whether someone were gauging their gender or their ethnicity or their age and making a bit of a guess at it. There's so many other things that make everybody who they are. And we see that a lot, particularly when I'm doing recruitment audits with clients, or we go into work with clients. We talk about true diversity and all of the possible things that it could cover, including those concealable traits like someone's religious beliefs, hidden disabilities, neurodiversity. The list is nearly endless. we find that more often than not, when somebody new comes into an organization, they're less likely, or some people are less likely, to disclose certain aspects of themselves naturally,
yeah,
for fear of, I don't know, judgment, stereotypes, assumptions.
Discrimination, like, yeah.
Discrimination, and the perception that they may, or people might have about them. They'll wait and they'll kind of check everybody out first, settle in before they maybe then choose to reveal certain parts of themselves. Now, that's even things, you know, we've spoken to colleagues in the past that haven't declared things like dyslexia or the fact that they've been diagnosed with autism for fear of that judgment and that stigma associated with it. And that plays out in the equality monitoring forms that people are filling in, or the demographic data that companies are collecting. And then over time, it's changing within their workforce when people obviously are more settled and content and have sussed it out. And that's why that narrative and storytelling is so important. And it's so key to show what organizations are doing to support their workforce and what they're passionate about, what they believe in. And even things, I mean, you mentioned before, this is not just about websites. It comes to career pages, and there's so many times where I'm looking through job adverts or descriptions and there is nothing about reasonable adjustments. There's nothing accessible for anyone to easily get in touch with hiring managers or teams to request whatever they might need. And that's an automatic barrier in place for people. Like, how many people are falling off that talent pipeline because one simple thing is missing that could make a real difference? I feel like I've just went off on a rant there. You can tell I've been looking at some stuff recently that has maybe pained my heart considerably.
I think so. And I think, well, it's interesting when you talk to organizations, the amount of times when they've put that in, and I've had these conversations, and I'm sure you both have as well, when you've done your recruitment audits, when somebody has messaged back and said, well, I'm really glad you've asked me that, because I wouldn't mind if you could help me with X, Y, or Z. And it's so much easier for them to do that if that line's been put in that's given them the option. If the option's not there, it's just a much more difficult thing to then have to go back with the worry that this is going to put me at a disadvantage in the interview process. So it's just that it's a really small win, that, isn't it?
Such a small win. And even just carrying that consistency through and making it really streamlined and easy for candidates to go through that hiring process. So if they're doing online uploading CVs, whatever that process might look like on careers pages, you know, is it accessible? Is it easy for people? Where are they dropping off? Just tracking absolutely everything. Now, my little scatterbrain is now dipping into something else, but still careers page related, where I was doing some research for a manufacturing client and I was looking at competitors in the market to see what their careers pages were like, what they were shouting about, things that they'd put in. And I remember finding a really class example, and I know a lot of companies do this, where depending on the function or role or department, they had just little snippets of testimonials or little bits of stories from colleagues working in that function, along with imagery. It might have just been like a headshot icon, but I just thought that's a really lovely way, embedded within those job descriptions, of bringing that team to life and sharing little snippets of, you know, where they've particularly excelled or what they've most benefited from in terms of what the company's offering. And again, I think that's really, really important to do, to give that personality to the brand and to give that human element to it.
And it's there, isn't it? It's real life things. They're all going to be there. Every organization's going to have it. And then if an organization is struggling to find it, then you know, again, where there's more work to be done. Because it's probably that it's not that it's not happening. It's the communication around it, the awareness around it on what's going on as well. And I think by starting to look into these things and looking at how you can improve the offering, improve the employer branding, I would hasten to say that most organizations will discover a lot of good things they didn't know about as well.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think it's really important as well, if we're talking about like that communication piece, where, again, something else I think that is done with the right intentions, but again, can be quite a challenge and quite counterproductive, is when we've seen some organisations where on the surface, you were talking about that shop window before, James, and on the front it's all shiny and you think, oh, they obviously are doing loads of great stuff. Must be a really supportive environment to work in. They're like, on the surface, the employer branding, it looks on point, everything looks great. But then once you scratch the surface, they haven't actually listened to any of the workforce's needs, and nobody for those groups that they're shouting about might feel particularly supported who work there. And there's that real disconnect and that virtue signaling. And again, it's not going to be done intentionally, but where there's like a lot of, you know, rainbow washing for pride and those kinds of things. Yeah. But then what are they actually doing on the ground in the work for the workforce? And have they actually listened to, you know, their workforce, what their needs are? Because yes, all of these issues are important, but every organization is going to have a workforce with a particular set of needs, and are they addressing them, and how are they supporting them? And I think that's all part of their employer brand as well, where they can specifically say, you know, we've listened, so we've put these initiatives in place, and this is a great benefit because, you know, we've got X, Y, and Z colleagues who have really felt the benefit from these things that we've put in place. And again, I think benefits are one of those things that a lot of organisations either completely forget about, don't shout about enough, don't promote enough, or they just don't think of them as, you know, being something that's going to enhance their employer brand as well and be something attractive.
Or definitely the wrong ones. I am sick of seeing fresh fruit.
I introduced fresh fruit in my last company.
Yeah, it's lovely. If they're doing that, I am.
No, it's a bit old hat now. It's a bit old hat. Yeah.
You think, but you, I don't know. Not recently. But yeah.
Yeah.
Fluffy benefits, like a pension. And I'm like, are you not obligated? Is it not mandatory that you're offering this?
That's true. That's true. Some kind of medical coverage now. It should also kind of come in everybody's package. But I think, you know, Lindsay, what you just said was that there's a lot to unpick in that statement, and the big one, I suppose, is the misleading of social media to what reality is, to use it, because that you can portray something that's absolutely inaccurate and not correct. And to me, the big awakening around that is when somebody goes in for an interview. That's the temperature check. And, you know, we would do the same when we go and visit a client on a client meeting. It's an interview as well. They're interviewing us, we're interviewing them. And same if you're going for a job, you're also interviewing them as well. Sometimes people forget that.
Yeah.
It's a two-way process, and it's also a temperature gauge. So the moment you step into that building, or even the moment you go into the car park, or you're on their premises, for every interaction that you have with everybody in that organization, to how you're made to feel, to how you see other people treating their colleagues and everything else, you're making assessments, using a lot of unconscious bias on that as well, by the way, but you are, your fast brain's going at a million miles an hour, taking all, you know, it's like looking at a new house, isn't it? You're walking in there, you're taking in everything around you, and making a lot of assumptions based on that information that you see, which is very different from a 30-second video on LinkedIn saying how great it is that we come to work here. So I think that's a big one. And it's also really interesting because during the pandemic, of course, most of those interviews took place online.
Yeah.
And people weren't going in the office. They weren't experiencing that. They're very different relationships. And what I found at recruiting at that time was the level of turnover was incredibly high. Now, a lot of people say that's because there were so many jobs in the market when we're starting to come out of the pandemic and everyone's moving. That's a valid point. There was a lot. But actually, there was also a lot of people who started roles during the pandemic and left very, very quickly, within 6 to 9 months. And some of the feedback that I was getting around that was, it wasn't what I thought it was like. It was very different from when I'd gone in the office. Because you hadn't had the chance to experience that or see the real company culture behind it. And I think that's a huge thing. So we've got to remember, you can't hide away from employer branding. You can put something out there, that is alluring and attractive, but the moment that person goes in there and has that interview experience, mm-hmm. that's when reality is going to hit.
Yeah, they're going to feel whether it's authentic or not straight away, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, they are. And I think with that as well, is, I mean, we're possibly going slightly off tangent, but it's all very interconnected. You know, I've had this conversation a lot about hiring managers and talent acquisition teams that actually don't know how to interview very well, that haven't had formal training around it to be able to do that, because that also does link into it. So there's, and I think you both said it, there's a big education piece with it.
There is. You know, it's such a hard thing to master interviewing somebody and to hone your technique. Being able to ask the questions that you need to while actively listening to make sure you're getting everything you need back from that person, while trying to coach them through maybe the bits that they're missing, making sure your notes are really hot so that you can make that evidence-based decision at the end, use your matrices. That's a lot. And again, if there's no formal training or no guidance around, you know, how do we use our interview scorecard matrix, or what's a 5, what's a 3, it can be a bit of a minefield. So yeah, I definitely agree with you in terms of that. That's a really challenging thing I see quite a lot, is that people aren't prepared and aren't trained and upskilled in how to be effective hiring managers or interviewers. Another point that's, again, not related, but that's fine. We're getting off tangent. What do you think, James, about companies now that are coming out with their interview questions? So the likes of John Lewis have published their interviews online. I know the company my husband works for, again, they're very open and transparent with, here's what we'll ask you, here's the competencies that we're looking for, and we'll score candidates against. What do you think about it?
I think it's quite interesting. I haven't done it myself. I haven't used it in the recruitment exercises that I do. But you're right, it's becoming more prevalent. I think the fact that there's a trend for structured interviewing and to have interview questions in the first place, brilliant. You know, big tick for that. 2 thumbs up. Sharing them. I mean, an interview should never be about trying to catch somebody out anyway. It's at the end of the day, you're trying to give a potential candidate their best opportunity to shine, not to catch them out, but to show. So I think it's a good thing. I believe it's a really good thing. You know, as long as we don't get candidates putting all the answers into AI and everything else. But that, again, that should be really evident with skilled interviewers to be able to see through that. And there's going to be follow-ups on some of those questions. Even, you know, the three of us know when we've done structured interviews, you don't stick to script fully. There's going to be some follow-ups within the information you've got there without, you know, leaning into different types of bias, but it's that information to guide you in certain directions as well. So, but again, there needs to be some training around it. But overall, I think it's a really good thing.
Yeah, I'd agree. And you know, it's funny because I have heard of people that have been interviewing on Zoom or on an online platform, and they are discovering that candidates are using AI along with those questions, and how that manifests and plays out. It's just a whole new world, isn't it? A whole new era and things to come.
It is.
I know, as if it wasn't complicated enough, everybody in trying to navigate this, but now AI is being thrown into the mix as well, and all of these.
It's difficult. It's difficult. And again, we're going on another tangent, but it's very interrelated. We'll just call this about, you know, going off in different tangents, shall we? But, yeah, absolutely. The tangent podcast. I like that. It could be a good name going forward. But it's problematic because all we're hearing about is employers at the moment. We're worried about people who are applying with AI written CVs, covering statements, answers to interview questions, etc. But then on the other side of the table, you've got some hiring teams that are using AI to screen. So. Yeah. It works both ways here. If you're going to implement AI into your own recruitment process and use that as a way of screening CVs, if you're a candidate, you want every advantage and you don't want to be weeded out because of that. So it's either kind of like, come on, guys, everybody's going to get on board for this, or we just don't do it. We just don't do it at all. And it's probably it's time saving, which is money saving and everything else from the employer's perspective. but I would, and you would expect me to say that because it's my job. I would always say you can't underestimate the importance of having that face to face contact, vetting, screening, follow up, interviewing. That, but then falls back to what we said and making sure that it's from an educated, skilled perspective as well, which is important.
It's totally key. We spoke last month to an amazing guy called Steve Erdl, who's the Chief Scientific Officer at Word Nerds. They're all about AI and understanding and language processing. And we were talking about, you know, human intelligence meets artificial intelligence and the need for that human element in AI, because obviously whatever data and information it's fed, it's coming from us, so it's going to be biased and flawed because humans are the source of it anyway. But I know that we touched on that, like, some of the big failures with those recruiting platforms that have potentially used AI or systems and processes that have been supported by AI that actually have been really detrimental. But then the other side, you know, going back to what we just said there about interviews and note-taking and evidence-based approach and making sure that we're trying to treat everybody fairly. There's also some phenomenal platforms that will do exceptional note-taking while you're interviewing so that you can go back and actually look at the evidence and not get caught up in recency bias or the last diamond answer to the question that puts them in a really positive.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, because you can get very distracted if your own brain as an interviewer is working in you know, across a number of different tasks and things like that. That's really good. Oh, be great if you could share some of those with me, actually, Lindsay. I'd be interested to see.
I can think of a really great company. Actually, I'll send you over their link.
Brilliant.
Afterwards to have a little look at. So we've totally went off tangent there, but I think we've actually covered some lovely things, if I'm really honest. I don't know if there's anything else we want to add in or touch on before I probably tangent us off in a different direction.
Not really. I mean, the only thing out. Sorry, go on, Lindsay.
No. Like, if there's anything else to add in, then great. I was just going to say, maybe if we can just like pull it together a bit and maybe give people a bit of food for thought on what they can do to, really harness their employer brand and give some good tips or advice that we've got guidance around that. But what were you going to say, James? Sorry.
I mean, on that note, I suppose, well, if we all give one great tip, right? Or hopefully it's a great tip. I would say it should be a collective. It's not one person's responsibility. It's not one person who's sitting in marketing or in HR or in recruitment to come up with that. It's everybody's responsibility, and it should be consistent, coherent, and it should represent everyone in the organization as well. So if there's any doubts around how to do it, there's got to be a group of people across different parts of an organization to come together to look at, right, how do we get to the outside world the message on what we're doing.
Yeah, great. And I think for me it would be that transparency. I think just being really transparent with it all helps that authenticity. So it's like, look, we don't know what all the answers are, we want to do the right thing, but we need to do some listening and we need some guidance. We're trying to navigate this in our communications. If we can be as honest and transparent as we can, you might not feel as though you've got the most diverse workforce, but once you start listening to those maybe more hidden traits and concealable traits, then you start getting more of those stories, and that can really support that narrative and show where you want to invest your time and your efforts as a company to align to those values. And that becomes then more of your specific employer branding then as well.
It's a good one.
I think for me, be considered with how you approach it and make sure it's threaded through not just website, careers page, but everything's going to have such a massive part to play in this. It's colleagues that work for you and what they're saying about the organization. It's candidates that maybe haven't progressed through various interview stages, but their impression of the organization and the candidate experience that they felt. It's suppliers that work alongside you. It's the recruitment agency that you've partnered with and how, you know, they're telling your story and that they understand your passion and are being authentic to who you are. Mm. Yeah, I don't have just one. Just make it connected, holistic, and and be really considered with it. Take your time and ask for help if you're not sure.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Good.
I think we managed to cover various points. But the thing is, it is so interconnected with so many things, isn't it? So, you know, I think tangents are good because it opens different doors to other things that people might not necessarily have joined the dots with. So, you know.
Exactly. If it is about DNA, if it's the lifeblood that runs through an organization, it's going to touch everything.
Yeah.
And if one piece is a little bit off, it's all not going to work properly or as effective as it should be.
Yeah, totally. James, thank you so much for more of your time.
Thanks for inviting me. I enjoyed it. Had a really good chat. Love the tangents.
Different tangent. If you're ever wanting those, come to the Lindsay's. Obviously, as Lindsay and I at 50/50, we love to align ourselves with companies that share similar values to us and what we're passionate about and believe in. How can people get in touch with you at Castle Peak should they require just a bit of signboarding or some guidance?
Yeah, always happy to have a conversation. You can reach me via the website, which is castlepeak-group.com, or find me on LinkedIn. Probably the biggest issue that most people have is they misspell my name. So it is CARSS on the end. And I might even have been on your invite a little bit wrong, Lindsay. But calling me out there at the end, aren't I? That's not very, it's not very inclusive. Yeah. No, everybody always puts two R's and then struggles to find because that it's one R, two S's. But if you get that piece right, you'll be able to find me. Website or LinkedIn.
I will link those below. Thank you so much. I will update the invite post recording to make sure I spell it right. That's a real school error for me. So yes, note to self, I will not get it wrong again. But yes, thank you so much. And we'll catch up with you soon, no doubt.
Brilliant. Thanks for having me. Really enjoyed it.
Total pleasure.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.